2 days later, the trend of the current was southeasterly. There was a pronounced thaw on the 22nd. The cabins were in a dripping state, and recently fallen snow was running off the ship in little streams. All hands were delighted, for the present discomfort offered promise of an early break-up of the pack. November 23rd. At 3 a.m., Young Island, Baleny Group, was seen bearing north 54 degrees east, true. The island, which showed up clearly on the horizon under a heavy stratus-covered sky, appeared to be very far distant. By latitude at noon, we are in 66 degrees 26 minutes south. As this is the charted latitude of Peak Foreman, Young Island, the bearing does not agree. Land was seen at 8 a.m. bearing south 60 degrees west, true. This, which would appear to be Cape Hudson, loomed up through the mists in the form of a high, bold headland, with low, undulating land stretching away to the south-southeast and to the westward of it. The appearance of this headland has been foretold for the last 2 days by masses of black fog, but it seems strange that land so high should not have been seen before, as there is little change in the atmospheric conditions. November 24th. Overcast and hazy during forenoon. Cloudy, clear and fine in afternoon and evening. Not a vestige of land can be seen, so Cape Hudson is really Cape Flyaway. This is most weird. All hands saw the headland to the southwest, and some of us sketched it. Now, afternoon, although the sky is beautifully clear to the southwest, nothing can be seen. We cannot have drifted far from yesterday's position. No wonder Wilkes reported land. 9 p.m. A low fringe of land appears on the horizon bearing southwest, but in no way resembles our cape of yesterday. This afternoon we took a cast of the lead through the crack 200 yards west of the ship, but found no bottom at 700 fathoms. An interesting incident on November 26th was the discovery of an emperor penguin rookery. Ninnis and Kavanagh took a long walk to the northwest and found the deserted rookery. The depressions in the ice made by the birds were about 18 inches long and contained a greyish residue. The rookery was in a hollow surrounded by pressure ridges 6 feet high. Apparently, about 20 birds had been there. No pieces of eggshell were seen, but the petrels and skuas had been there in force and probably would have taken all scraps of this kind. The floes were becoming soft and rotten, and walking was increasingly difficult. Deep pools of slush and water covered with thin snow made traps for the men. Stenhouse thought that a stiff blizzard would break up the pack. His anxiety was increasing with the advance of the season, and his log is a record of deep yearning to be free and active again. But the grip of the pack was inexorable. The hands had plenty of work on the Aurora, which was being made shipshape after the buffeting of the winter storms. Seals and penguins were seen frequently, and the supply of fresh meat was maintained. The jury rudder was ready to be shipped when the ship was released, but in the meantime it was not being exposed to the attacks of the ice. No appreciable change in our surroundings was the note for December 17th. Every day past now reduces our chance of getting out in time to go north for rudder, anchors and coal. If we break out before January 15th, we might get north to New Zealand and down to Cape Evans again in time to pick up the parties. After that date, we can only attempt to go south in our crippled state and short of fuel. With only 9 days' coal on board, we would have little chance of working through any Ross Sea pack or of getting south at all if we encountered many blizzards. Still, there is a sporting chance and luck may be with us. Shackleton may be past the pole now. I wish our wireless calls had got through. Christmas Day, with its special dinner and mild festivities, came and passed, and still the ice remained firm. The men were finding some interest in watching the molting of emperor penguins, which were stationed at various points in the neighbourhood of the ship. They had taken station to leeward of hummocks, and appeared to move only when the wind changed or the snow around them had become foul. They covered but a few yards on these journeys, and even then stumbled in their weakness. One emperor was brought on board alive, and the crew were greatly amused to see the bird balancing himself on heels and tail, with upturned toes, the position adopted when the egg is resting on the feet during the incubation period. The threat of a stiff blow aroused hopes of release several times, but the blizzard, probably the first Antarctic blizzard that was ever longed for, did not arrive. New Year's Day found Stenhouse and other men just recovering from an attack of snow blindness, contracted by making an excursion across the floes without snow goggles. At the end of the first week in January, the ship was in latitude 65 degrees 45 minutes south. The pack was well broken a mile from the ship, and the ice was rolling fast. Under the bows and stern, the pools were growing and stretching away in long lanes to the west. A seal came up to blow under the stern on the 6th, proving that there was an opening in the sunken ice there. Stenhouse was economizing in food. No breakfast was served on the ship, and seal or penguin meat was used for at least one of the two meals later in the day. All hands were short of clothing, but Stenhouse was keeping intact the sledging gear intended for the use of the shore party. Strong variable winds on the 9th raised hopes again, and on the morning of the 10th the ice appeared to be well broken from half a mile to a mile distant from the ship in all directions. It seems extraordinary that the ship should be held in an almost unbroken flow of about a mile square, the more so as this patch was completely screwed and broken during the smash in July, and contains many faults. In almost any direction at a distance of half a mile from the ship there are pressure ridges of 8-inch ice piled 20 feet high. It was provident that although so near, these ridges were escaped. The middle of January was past, and the Aurora lay still in the ice. The period of continuous day was drawing towards its close, and there was an appreciable twilight at midnight. A dark water sky could be seen on the northern horizon. The latitude on January 24th was 65 degrees 39 and a half minutes south. Towards the end of the month, Stenhouse ordered a thorough overhaul of the stores and general preparations for a move. The supply of flour and butter was ample, other stores were running low, and the crew lost no opportunity of capturing seals and penguins. Adelies were travelling to the east-southeast in considerable numbers, but they could not be taken unless they approached the ship closely, owing to the soft condition of the ice. The wireless plant, which had been idle during the months of daylight, had been rigged again, and Hook resumed his calls to Macquarie Island on February 2nd. He listened in vain for any indication that he had been heard. The pack was showing much movement, but the large floe containing the ship remained firm. The breakup of the floe came on February 12th. Strong northeast to southeast winds put the ice in motion and brought a perceptible swell. The ship was making some water, a foretaste of a trouble to come, and all hands spent the day at the pumps, reducing the water from 3 feet 8.5 inches in the well to 12 inches, in spite of frozen pipes and other difficulties. Work had just finished for the night when the ice broke astern and quickly split in all directions under the influence of the swell. The men managed to save some seal meat which had been cached in a drift near the gangway. They lost the flagstaff, which had been rigged as a wireless mast out on the floe, but drew in the aerial. The ship was floating now amid fragments of floe and bumping considerably in the swell. A fresh southerly wind blew during the night, and the ship started to forge ahead gradually without sail. At 8:30 a.m. on the 13th, Stenhouse set the foresail and foretopmast sail, and the Aurora moved northward slowly, being brought up occasionally by large floes. Navigation under such conditions, without steam and without a rudder, was exceedingly difficult, but Stenhouse wished, if possible, to save his small remaining stock of coal until he cleared the pack, so that a quick run might be made to McMurdo Sound. The jury rudder could not be rigged in the pack. The ship was making about 3.5 feet of water in the 24 hours, a quantity easily kept in check by the pumps. During the 14th, the Aurora worked very slowly northward through heavy pack. Occasionally the yards were backed or an ice anchor put into a floe to help her out of difficult places, but much of the time she steered herself. The jury rudder boom was topped into position in the afternoon, but the rudder was not to be shipped until open pack or open water was reached. The ship was held up all day on the 15th in latitude 64 degrees 38 minutes south. Heavy floes barred progress in every direction. Attempts were made to work the ship by trimming sails and warping with ice anchors, but she could not be manoeuvred smartly enough to take advantage of leads that opened and closed. This state of affairs continued throughout the 16th. That night a heavy swell was rolling under the ice, and the ship had a rough time. One pointed floe 10 or 12 feet thick was steadily battering with a 3 feet send against the starboard side, and fenders only partially deadened the shock. "It is no use butting against this pack with steam power," wrote Stenhouse. "We would use all our meagre supply of coal in reaching the limit of the ice in sight, and then we would be in a hole with neither ballast nor fuel." But if this stagnation lasts another week, we will have to raise steam and consume our coal in an endeavour to get into navigable waters. I am afraid our chances of getting south are very small now.